And our guest this hour, Robert Young Pelton, will take your phone calls with him as we talk about some of these world events. Next hour, Jim Harrell joins us as we talk about some true ghost stories on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Robert Young Pelton with us. We'll get to your calls in just a second. Robert, did you ever find Joseph Kony, the African leader of the Lord's Resistance Army?
We're waiting for part two. So in February, I head off to the Central African Republic, where Kony is running ivory and gold dust for the Silica. So that's the termination, because my editor keeps yelling at me, when am I going to finish that book? So I've been busy, but I will finish it.
I had heard he was in poor health. Any updates on that?
No, everybody that we're looking for is always in poor health, but he's obviously living in the bush, but I don't think he's hurting. I think he's like Bin Laden was dying of multiple diseases until we found him watching TV. So,
is he still doing the mayhem that he had been doing?
No, he works with his two sons, and he works out of the area around south of Sudan, in an area called Kufiya Kingi. That's where the railhead terminus is. So he uses his people to physically carry ivory tusks out of Garamba Park, and also he moves gold dust for the miners. There's a number of surface pits in the eastern part of Central African Republic that he moves into Sudan for the military and then out to the terminus. So he stays in the bush with his people.
Have you seen a point right now since the election where so many people are angry at so many different things, Robert? I mean, it's truly, it's remarkable.
Okay, so here's my take on it, is that in the era of, let's say, Stalin and people like that, in order to get control over people, you had to destroy their trust and faith in things like the media and government, so that you just had to believe someone. So I think people understand that there's a lot of things going on, and that they don't trust what they read in the news, they don't trust politicians. They want to understand what we're going to do next. The reality is we don't know what we're doing next. And I think that's the scary part. And I do my research into, okay, what are we doing in Yemen? What are we doing in Somalia? And people are looking to me for answers. So we ran out of excuses, we ran out of time, we ran out of money, and we have all these wars cooking. So, yeah, we are entering a very dangerous period of time.
All right, let's go to the phones for the hour that we have remaining, 45 minutes now. Harry is in Port Huron, Michigan. Welcome to the show. Harry, welcome back. Hi there.
Well, thank you very, very much, George.
Sure.
And, Bob, questions for you, two of them, both on Afghanistan. One, do the Afghanistan people want us over there? Do they want us out? What do they want? And secondly, what about the Kurds? I've read a lot about the Kurds. I know that they're people, they're good people, they're pro-freedom, they want freedom over there. What do you think about them as well?
Okay, so two quick questions. So we spent $15 billion a year, and foreign donors will spend about the same amount every year in Afghanistan. You have to remember, Afghanistan used to be the poorest country on earth, so without foreign assistance, they have nothing. So yes, they want us there. The Taliban is fighting outside interference, but they don't have any other solution, so the Afghans are caught in a very ugly situation. The Kurds are screwed because they're ethnic. They had a country back in the 20s, very briefly, but that ethnic group straddles Syria, Turkey, Iraq, and each partner doesn't want, and Iran, of course, each partner doesn't want the Kurds to have their own country because it'll carve out chunks of their own country, particularly Turkey. Most of eastern Turkey is Kurdish, so if the Kurds had their own state, they would then be, you know, major political players against the Iranians, against the Turkish, against the Syrians. Yes, they are excellent allies, and they have proven to be bulletproof in terms of not being infected by Islamic fundamentalism. So they essentially have an autonomous area, but we're not officially recognizing it.
Whatever happened to Karzai? And did he run off with millions?
Karzai was worried about going to jail. So when they elected the new president, Kenny Ghani, they had to give him like a nice stipend, and they had to make sure that he didn't get dragged into court for stealing all that money. So he's basically a peacemaker. You know, he's an elder. He's brought in to discuss or negotiate peace deals. So he's an elder statesman.
Right? Is he still living there, or is he in London or Paris or someplace?
No, he has property in Dubai. Most of his family is in the U.S. and also in Dubai. So he lives in Afghanistan but travels back and forth.
How much do you think he got out of this?
When I was there at the airport, they told me that they use a certain kind of duffel bag. It's about 3 feet by about a foot and a half, with diplomatic carrier bags to move cash from Afghanistan. Each one of those bags holds about $2.5-3 million.
Oh, my God.
So they always brought plenty of bags with them when they traveled out of the country.
And they never got stopped?
Well, because they're diplomatic.
It's a diplomatic pouch, right?
Nothing. They can't. Yeah, they can't search their luggage.
Oh my gosh!
Well, we started by pumping in billions of dollars out of that country, so it's not surprising that a lot of it just went straight out of the country.
And Robert, what's your take on what's going on in Iraq right now?
Well, Iraq's a mess because after we left, they aligned themselves with Iran, and it became a Shia government, which then angered the Sunnis, who then brought in ISIS, and then now we're trying to fix all that. But, you know, Iraq is a divisive country, but it can survive. It has oil, it has industry, it has all things it needs, but it still has that horrible Shia-Sunni divide that Iran now is a major player. And so, of course, they support the Shia agenda, and we support the Sunni agenda now. So we get involved in these things that go back, you know, 2,000 years, and we can never fix them.
Marlo's with us, Long Beach, California. Hello, Marlo. Go ahead.
Good morning, or good evening, wherever we're listening.
Wherever we are.
Yes. Mr. Pelton, a little bit on my background. I have an IT background as well. I understand a little bit about the availability of hacking tools and the like. But I wanted to clarify what statement you were making about who was responsible for, and I hope it was, if I'm not, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you said that you believe the hacking of, is it the DNC or maybe just Hillary Clinton's emails were done by readily available hacking tools. And that seems to conflict with what I'm hearing 17 intelligence agencies claim to be true. And after seeing the evidence that they have, Mr. Trump has changed his opinion as well. At least it's hard for me to understand what he actually believes because it changes over and over. But from what I understand, that inside information that these intelligence agencies presented to him convinced them of Russia's involvement. Now, you seem to be someone that with a lot of inside information yourself. I wondered if you had access to something other than what they presented to him and why you disagree with that.
Okay, and we were also talking about WikiLeaks grabbing the information and sending it on. But go ahead, Rob.
So I want to make it clear that my information comes from people who work in the military as counter-hackers and psyops experts. In other words, these are people that go out and destroy other computer systems. They look for people hacking systems. They infect those systems. But we should be clear about one thing. The word hacking is used a lot, but most of what we're talking about with the DNC was instigated by phishing. That means that somebody clicked on an email that they thought was legitimate, but then put a virus or got into their system, gave them access to their emails, and somehow ended up in somebody else's computer. The article I'm writing for the Foreign Policy talks about a very interesting concept, which is that all high-profile servers are constantly under attack by multiple hackers, meaning both sort of freelancers, you know, Eastern Europeans who are looking for anything, and they could be phishing, they could be hacking, they could be looking for open ports. Also government, whether it's China, whether it's Germany, whether it's
North Korea,
if you want. These people have state-sponsored groups that sit there and hack, and they also employ freelancers, meaning that if you find something, they will monetize it. As a matter of fact, even our own government will monetize you if you can hack into our systems. They have a contest for that. And so my point was, when Hillary Clinton set up a server in her home on and around 2009, she had a very, very high-profile computer system and server spread across, I think she had three of them in Colorado and one physically in her house. And there were numerous, hundreds, if not thousands of attempts to get information from her computer. And the people I am interviewing in this article literally reviewed files taken from not only her computer, but other people's computers that were being passed around to see if they were worth something. These are not state-sponsored hackers. So my point is that the 17 intelligence agencies are very correct when they said that Vladimir Putin had an interest in making sure that someone who was disposed to the U.S. or kindly disposed to Russia, which would be Donald Trump, was elected, and that there were obviously attempts to influence, not major ones, but that is nothing compared to the freelance or call them, you know, transnational mercenary hackers who will go after everything. And I'll give you a case in point. When Giuliani's server was hacked, it was live on Twitter. And his poor guy through Giuliani's server, which is really nothing. There's nothing there. But he had something like 1,500 people retweeting his exploration of this server. So to answer your question correctly, yes, everybody's hacking everything, and you actually don't know whether people have your content. And finally, hacking is not just people on computers. You ask the very simple question, why are Hillary Clinton's emails on a public site like WikiLeaks? And they can be there because of an FBI. They can be there because somebody blackbagged something. But the point is that they use the DNC and Hillary Clinton's email to degrade people's confidence in her.
It is amazing how vulnerable everybody is to hacking.
Well, talk about fake news. Now, let's say I publish an email from George Neary that's embarrassing. You say, hey, that's not my email.
I didn't do that. You typed it up or whatever.
How do you prove that I didn't get that from your server? This is the interesting thing about forensics and hacking. We're basically hacking people's public confidence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Next up, we go to Joe in Baltimore, Maryland, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hi, Robert. This is Joe from Facebook.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Hey, I was wondering, do you have a feel for whether Trump's foreign policy would be more inclined to be militaristic and hawkish than Barack Obama's?
Okay, that's a very good question. So we know that Barack Obama was a lawyer, and he went with subterfuge. He went with passive sort of covert type of assassinations, and that's why we have drones across Africa and all over the place. And he was physically responsible for saying, yes, go kill that person, unless it was ISIS or a recognized terrorist group. Donald Trump has an interesting dilemma because he talks a good game, but he's got some very, very solid, experienced people at the helm. So people like James Mattis are not going to go charging out and starting a war. They've already been fighting a war. And they're going to be very cautious. Flynn has said many times that he wants to eliminate ISIS. He even wrote a book about it. The question would be, will they continue the war by proxy? In other words, will we provide special operations troops? We use ISR, which is drone or visual elite intelligence. Or do we put more robust American presence on the ground and sort of push aside the proxies and get right down to it? That's the question open to discussion. I've seen no indication from anything Donald Trump has said that he wants to commit U.S. troops or more U.S. troops.
Are we going to get to a point, Robert, where this thing just blows up on everybody? Or are we going to contain it?
We're working within fictitious states. Now, don't forget, we're fighting wars in which the government is sort of viewed as legitimate, but it's not technically legitimate on the ground. So Libya, Afghanistan, Somalia, I mean, the governments are sitting in buildings. You know? The GMA, they're from Libya, is like too scared to come out of their compound. In Afghanistan, our troops in Kabul are literally locked down and have to take a helicopter or an armored car to the airport. So, you know, the Afghan government does function, but only with our money and only in certain parts of the country. So how long do we maintain that fiction that these countries are stable and able to take care of themselves? We may get to a point where we say, you know, Afghanistan was always divisive. It will be divisive, and we can't fix that. And that will be a pretty profound decision.
We got Buck in Limestone, Virginia. Hello there, Buckingham. Welcome to the show.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call,
sure thing,
man. It's good to hear your voice.
You too.
I'd like to ask, and by the way, I believe your guest tonight is without a doubt the most informed individual I've heard with regard to world affairs. And I'd like to ask him, in his assessment, number one, what or who does he think is the biggest threat to United States security on a global basis? And then the same thing right here at home, internally, who or what does he think is the biggest threat to our security right now?
All right. Thanks, Buck.
That's very good. So I think the biggest threat to our security is confidence or self-confidence. You know, most people forget that the money we spend has no actual value except the confidence in that currency. And if we believe that we're going to have a job and things will be fine, then we'll do fine. If we feel that we're going to fail and that we're going to lose, and this is why wars are important, because when we win a war, we feel like we're powerful and the country is winning. When we are engaged in decades-long wars with no outcome, we feel like we're failing. So the first thing we need to focus on is the actual confidence of the population, which is why I don't like to see these divisive discussions and the whole, you know, Clinton versus Trump or you, me, right, left. So nobody's bringing the country together. We seem to be splitting further apart. And then secondly, we don't have a plan. And I know we're going to make America great again and all these slogans, but it would be very nice to get back to that basic country building, you know, infrastructure repairs, jobs, better schools, et cetera, et cetera. So let's see if that comes about.
We shall see. We're going to come back in just a moment, as a matter of fact, and take final phone calls with Robert Young Pelton. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. One is called dangerousmagazine.com. The other is called comebackalive.com. That's always a good idea. And a couple of his books out there, The World's Most Dangerous Places and also The Adventurist. So stick with us. If you can, like us on Facebook. It's no fake news there. And then follow us on Twitter, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Jim Harrell joins us as we talk about some strange and unexplained stories. And in a moment, we'll be back with Robert Young Pelton taking final calls about what's going on this planet. And welcome back with Robert Young Pelton. It's our final segment here with Robert Young Pelton. And Robert, what are you working on next? What are your next projects?
Well, I've got to finish my Finding Kony book. I'm also working with the Afghan government to try to get something going there to set up a strategic communications capability. And then, of course, I do my DPX gear knives. I just came back from SHOT Show.
Ah, okay. Yeah, we've got a lot of people that go to that.
Oh, my God, 62,000 people.
It's growing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. And it's an interest, you know, see the same people when they come by, so it's great. And then I've got some other books I've got to finish, but I won't talk about those. But I'm also doing this foreign policy article on the hacking and how it influenced the election or didn't. I won't reveal the secret yet. And just generally really enjoying trying to figure out what's going on in the world. I also work with the Migrant Offshore Aid Station, which is called MOAS out of Malta, which rescues refugees in the Mediterranean, and they're working on getting ready for next year. So if you go to moas.eu, mm-hmm, you can see what they're doing. So always busy.
Are you concerned at all about some world conflict that could pull us into a World War III?
Europe is under pressure from Russia, and I do think that a closer relationship with Russia will put a little bit more control on that.
Right. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think China's fine. Yeah, I don't care about China that much because we have so much of a financial relationship with them. And all these small wars we're fighting don't look a whole lot different now than when we went into them. So at some point, we're going to try to stop saving the world from themselves. But I don't see any huge sea change. We're so connected these days, you know? When you buy an Apple computer, it comes directly from China, you know? So
yeah.
Things aren't exotic anymore. And there are uprisings, like the Arab Spring was an example of a huge area just torn apart. But I think this is the ebb and flow of civilization. You know, you have fixed structures and they break and then they form again. So I don't see any major threats for America. I see a lot of strange things happening that we don't pay attention to.
Lone wolves, they're going to come through. That's going to happen.
Yeah, but statistically, these are still small events. I mean, when you kind of stand back and look at the causes of death in the U.S., causes of violence, the media is almost out of control the way they exaggerate things to make it seem like there's somebody hiding under every bush.
More people die every year from the common flu.
Yeah, so I mean, we have to have some kind of measuring tool that says, okay, this is really important. We need to focus on this, you know, as opposed to, oh my God, is every Muslim a terrorist? Is every mosque a breeding site? I mean, these are things, this sort of, some kind of frenzy that gets generated, and then we realize that, no, it's not that. Lone wolves are an interesting thing because I think these are no different than the school shooters or the
no, they're not.
People. Suicide by cop folks who just don't have the full, what do they say, two beers short of a six-pack.
Yep, so. That's exactly right. They're just crazed people. Let's go to the phones. We've got Kyla in Toronto, Canada, on the international line. Hey, Kyla, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Great.
And good morning to Robert. Craig Hood has been on your show so many times. He talks about the fact that it's legal for the government to use propaganda on their own people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I researched that completely. I emailed Craig. Anyhow, back in 1948, the Smith-Mundt Act was passed, which banned propaganda. Obama signed the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, and in the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, there's a National Defense Authorization Act, 114, and it's scary how the government has the right to use whatever propaganda it wants on the American people.
Well, we've talked about this before, the right to arrest without trial, to convict under war acts and everything else. That stuff is scary, Robert.
But look at the election. The election was a perfect example of people psyoping the American public. So, you know, Donald Trump ran a very sophisticated campaign using big data, similar to what Obama did in 2012. Hillary Clinton used sort of old-fashioned, you know, sort of phone polls and TV advertising, and it was really a paradigm shift where we don't have a grip on who's saying what to whom, and then we have people gaming that system to make us like or dislike somebody. So, yes, it's against the law for the military or the government to have psychological operations or propaganda against Americans, but every election cycle, we drive a huge axe between, you know, the left and the right.
Next up, we go to Santa Monica, California, way down the street here, west of the Rockies. Peter's with us. Peter, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, nice to hear you guys share there. I was just going to mention there's a lot of new evidence these days by many doctors, scientists, and other spiritual people, even Mother Teresa, for instance, that the soul does actually come into the body at the point of conception. And regarding this, even all the religions of the world for society as a whole for a long time have believed that they've never, ever agreed with having an abortion, say. And it seems that a lot of the women who are very good people and very perhaps innocent in this way have been influenced by the media to accept abortion as being okay to do, when maybe our society as a whole, what we need to do is really do a real thorough investigation to find out when does the soul come in for sure, which I feel is a conception, and many others do too, until we allow abortions in America anymore, because I feel it's one of the greatest karmic burdens on America, and I don't think God is too happy with it.
All right, well, that's your comments. Those would be great open-line comments, which we will be doing in our program tomorrow, by the way. Robert, no need to comment on that.
You don't want to start that ball rolling.
Frankfort, Kentucky, we've got Ann east of the Rockies. Hello, Ann. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Not only do bad actors plant fake news against themselves so that then they can point to it and say, see, none of that stuff is true. And I also think it's also being used as a pretext for prior restraint censorship, like Facebook is talking about.
Could be.
Because, you know, in our open society with free speech, if there's libel or slander and you can prove damages, you take them to court. That's the remedy for false information being put out about you.
Not a lot of people have the resources to do that at all, and then you have to, you know, prove a malicious disregard
exactly.
for the facts.
And you have to prove damages. And in the UK, it's a little easier. But the problem is anybody can type anything on the Internet, and they can say whatever they want, no matter how malicious, and you don't even know who they are. They can create a persona, and then they can share that over and over again.
One of the things we're talking about Wednesday on the program, Robert, cyberbullying done by a lot of people who hide behind false everything.
Well, there's no accountability. I mean, if I didn't like your show and I tweeted 20 times a day...
Is that you? Are you the one who did that?
that there's no... I mean, typically the New York Times is supposed to have checks and balances, but obviously Facebook and Twitter doesn't. And the fascinating thing about Facebook is I spend lots of time in Facebook jail because somebody somewhere decided that the photograph that I use, which is not offensive or even scandalous, bothered them, so I go straight to jail. And now they have this thing called self-incrimination where they say, of the following photos on your page, click which ones show nudity. Jeez. So you basically click, and then boom, off you go to jail. You just convicted yourself.
Let's go to Cornelius now in Louisiana. Hello, Cornelius. Go ahead.
Hello, George, and our Tommy, our friend. Like I tell everybody, Robert, I'm the God, Guns and Gold man, the Bible, Bullets and Beans man, and get ready. I hope you come to Mardi Gras and see us down here before it's all over with. But my question for you is this. I'm a Trump supporter, happen to be African-American. I'm glad you're on because I can tell you don't support either way, and that's good. I want to meet Howard Bloom one day. I'd like to talk to him, too. But George is so nice and by taking these different phone calls. My question for you, George Soros was behind this thing with this women's march and everything, and he was behind the British bringing down the pound in England and stuff. Will George Soros or these other billionaires or globalists try to bring down Trump with an economic collapse, and the Patriots will win the Super Bowl?
There's your prediction. What do you think, though, Robert?
In my investigation, what I found is that George Soros fits all the requirements for the guilty party, because his organization was kicked out of Russia, both of his Open Society Foundation and the other one, and he lost almost $1 billion when Donald Trump was elected. So he actually has the most reason to try to bring down Trump or link him to Russia. So there's no evidence to prove that. And when I talked to some folks at the Soros Foundation, they said, oh, no, we don't do that, and we're not even organized enough to do that. But there are international actors who aren't in the news who have every reason to manipulate, you know, financial markets or people's reputations for their own benefit.
And I'm not sure that the media and the administration can keep up this pace, albeit today's Monday. You got sworn in on Friday. But if they keep doing this every day, they're going to run out of steam.
Well,
it's too much.
I used to count how many stories were negative towards Donald Trump and then how many were negative towards Clinton, and I couldn't figure out why they're so obsessed with, you know, throwing rocks at people instead of just analytical stuff. But going forward, yes, he's going to make decisions. They're going to have consequences, and hopefully the media that hates him is not going to gloss over what actually went wrong and just focus on the personality, because there's more than one person in the government.
So true. Tom's in Baltimore, Maryland, now on the air. Go ahead, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
The previous female caller that mentioned the amendment to the NDAA.
Mm-hmm.
Gave me a perfect segue into what I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
Mr. Pelton, you had said in commenting afterwards, of course it's illegal for the government to propagandize and use psychops on its people. But what she was saying, and she's correct, is that the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, the NDA Amendment 114, I believe it was, actually turned around. They called it the Modernization Act. What it did is really repeal the Smith-Mundt prohibition on propagandizing the American people. What it did was make what they've been doing all along, I suspect, legal. So they can use psychops, they can propagandize the American people, and that was her point, and a very good one, one to keep in mind. And that's my segue into what I wanted to mention. You were on George's show, I guess, about 2 years ago, and I challenged you with what you were saying about the Twin Tower attack. And you were stating certain things that simply were not true. And I had the experience from having worked with Controlled Demolition Incorporated to refute what you had said, and I did so. And in fact, in looking into your background, sir, I found that when you were in Afghanistan, even the U.S. military took issue with your playing fast and loose with the facts. They, in fact, said that it was their opinion that you were more interested in journalistic sensationalism than getting the facts straight. And I have to agree. Although I agree with a lot of what you say, I think you should be more careful, and I think your listeners, George, should know that Mr. Pelton actually mixes in some untruths, whether intentional or not.
Can you give me something? Can you give me something specific so he can react to that?
No, I remember this gentleman, and I explained to him that the World Trade Centers were not loaded with explosives. I used to work as a blaster's assistant, and it would take years to drill all the holes and put all the explosives in there. And secondly, he's talking about a Men's Journal article in which I was invited by the human terrain teams to visit their organization, and I wrote down what happened. And what happened is that the people who wanted me to write a glowing sort of embed-style report were shocked that I actually wrote down what happened and filed a letter with the Men's Journal, which they published. But the bottom line is everything that happened was true. So just stating that something is wrong or right without any evidence is interesting, but it's not true. But you can Google the Men's Journal article about the human terrain team, and if you do any exploration into controlled demolition, and you know how long it takes to prep a building, you know, my statement that the World Trade Centers were not prepared with explosives is true, because it would take literally months and months and months of moving explosives up and down elevators, drilling holes, et cetera, et cetera. So,
all right, we're almost out of time, Robert. Only have about a minute left. I would love for you to give out your websites and where people can find your books, because they are well done.
Well, books you can find in bookstores or on Amazon. Just Google my name. And then my website is comebacklive.com. And my company that makes survival gear is called dpxgear.com. And I have to say, George, that I really enjoy coming on your program, because it's rare that you get to have an in-depth discussion with people who listen, and you can listen to what they want to hear answers to.
Absolutely. And they, you know what? And the good part about this, Robert, they don't have to agree with you or me or anybody.
Exactly. And I don't have to agree with them, but
that's right.
It's so rare to have both sides of the conversation instead of just talking heads.
Yep.
Blathering at people.
You won't get that here. Okay, Robert, thank you so much again for being on the program.
My pleasure, always, George.
Robert Young Pelton. Up next, a couple hours of some strange and unexplained with Jim Harold. He has written books like True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's written a book called True Ghost Story Adult Coloring Book. We won't go there, though I'm sure it's okay. We'll be back.